What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 27 of Zipline, the official Zipper Interactive podcast. I'm Chris Roper.
I'm Jeremy Dunham, and today we are joined for the final podcast of the year by a pair of designers. You guys should know them well. They've been on the show several times. Travis Steiner from SOCOM and Ben Jones from MAG. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey. Howdy.
Welcome
Ben,
aboard.
Well, Ben is helping out with SOCOM now, so Ben's actually...
I'm SOCOM.
Best of both worlds.
But they know him best from MAG at
this
point.
That's true.
I think it's time for the Z-Cap. Since our last podcast, obviously the most important thing to happen in Zipperland was the release of MAG version 2.10. We couldn't talk about this when we did our podcast last time, as everybody knows, but its big addition was the addition of multi-queue. And that's basically a replacement for old directives queue. I'm sure a lot of folks have used that in the past, especially to get the trophy. But basically it allows you to queue up for multiple game types at once, and it was created specifically to allow game wait times to go down. That was the whole aim. That's the impetus behind its creation. Granted, we have run into one snafu, as everyone is aware, and that's that since its implementation, games are spinning up more often. We're having more games, and the downside so far is that domination games are not happening as much. We are aware of this. We are working on this. Ben, can you elaborate a little bit on what's being done?
Sure. I think one of the problems with a system like this, especially so late in development, is that it's very difficult for us to test it in-house. So we did the best we could internally, and we pushed it out there, and we're continuing to tweak it daily. And I know our networking team is doing a really good job looking at that. But we want to make sure that the games don't cut off early. Essentially, what we're seeing is, you know, player population builds and builds and builds, but it says, okay, a game hasn't kicked off in X seconds, so let's just, you know, push the next available game, which, you know, could be Acquisition or Escalation, instead of waiting a little bit longer for a domination game. So we're tweaking those settings, and we're confident that pretty soon we're going to have everything sorted out.
Yeah, and speaking with the engineering team, they look like it'll definitely be before the end of the year that we'll have this figured out, number one. And number two is that, the best part about it, fixing it, is that it's something that we can adjust on the fly. You won't have to download a patch. You won't have to get a new version. We can do it from our side. So as we tweak it, it should be pretty transparent for you guys. So that's a big plus.
Another cool thing that happened this week, you may have noticed that we relaunched SOCOM.com. A lot of people were wondering, you know, are you going to do anything new for SOCOM 4? We're saying, you know, obviously, you know, by the time the game comes out. And lo and behold, last week was the kind of first part of this thing. Obviously, well, there's not a whole lot of new information for SOCOM 4 on there, although you have some character profiles. People were finding some interesting information by looking at the country-specific versions of the website and pulling out. So there's some people that are digging for a little bit of information. There's not a ton, but more stuff will come online as the game gets closer to release. So look at this as kind of the first part of that one. But the reception to it seems to be pretty good. You can get to the forums more easily, which has some, well, we'll just say some interesting
reactions
on the boards. Yeah. But everybody seems to be happy with the way that it looks. And
One note that you brought up about everyone checking out the region-specific versions of SOCOM.com, everyone's been looking, as you remember, way back when, Travis, you talked about how when you played in Australia, you'd have the Australian Special Forces unit. But on the website, we still mention it's Navy SEALs. Just to clarify, everyone, it's still going to be the Australian Special Forces. Yeah, so don't worry. It's still the Australian Special Forces, just not in the website in time. That'll get updated soon. Honest opinion, Travis, you like the new website?
I love it. You know, right from the get-go, you know what I noticed about it? Is it doesn't have that pick your year of birth system at the
now
beginning.
You can type it.
You can just go right in, type your age, and you're in. That's the first website I've ever seen that's done that. So
yeah, I actually agree. Awesome. I was kind of taken aback by that. I'm like, this is a pretty sweet system. I'm 76, go. As opposed to my usual, like, leave everything
blank.
But
everyone
blank,
puts
and
in their real
birth
age,
is like 1929.
Right? Everyone puts in their real age. So if you're 8, you're not going to look at the website.
Of course.
I do, for some reason. As long as I've ever used those things from the beginning of the internet, I've always put in my actual age.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel compelled to do it.
See, I feel like this new system on the website makes me want to put in my real age, but then, like Ben's saying, with the old system, I always felt like, 1905.
I'm 105.
Yep.
Right? Now, math wins.
Yeah. Speaking of new announcements, we're going to have something we've been talking about for a little while. We have a couple of things going on for MAG to increase, you know, the launch time for games, which we have addressed in multi-queue, which Jeremy has mentioned is a work in progress. And we have some other things that we hadn't announced yet.
We were going to talk about it this week.
Yes, but we can't talk about it quite yet, but we're mere days away from announcing this thing. And
early next week.
Yeah, and you'll see it come to fruition very, very soon. So look next week on both the MAG and the PlayStation blog, and you will see information on what is next for MAG.
Now, we mentioned last week that this would be our last Zipline podcast of 2010, but it's also the last Zipline podcast in the form that you are currently hearing, and as you know it. When we return next year, and we'll return on January 14th, that'll be our first podcast of 2011, we'll have a brand new format, and we think that it better serves our original goal for the podcast, which was to give you a closer look at the people behind the game, in addition to being informative and helpful and letting you know what we're working on. And what that means is it's going to be a lot more conversational. It's going to be formatted in a much more casual way than it is now, much less rigid. And we're also going to be doing things like having episode-specific topics that allows us to riff on what's going on in the world. And it could be anything from a gameplay-related topic to something more broad. So I think that that's going to be a really cool format for people. I think it's going to be better for the guests, better for the listener. And best of all, I think, is you can expect guests that not only have been here before, but haven't been here before, and not necessarily who work here either. So we think that you'll have a nice range of people.
Is this like man on the street type forum? Well, like we're just going to grab random people at the bus stop across the street.
Get the
like,
guy from GameStop.
You will see. You'll see. You have to wait till next year, but we've got some things in the works.
I'm excited.
Looking forward to it.
And with that, let's get to some mad questions.
Partner wants to know, he's a little friend of the podcast, depending on his question. Yes. He says he looks forward to the colored crosshair options in SOCOM 4, but he was wondering, Ben, if that could be done in MAG. I especially would like to see that for the Move controller, since the crosshairs aren't always in the middle of the screen like the DualShock 3, and in the heat of battle, it can be hard to sometimes know where you're aiming.
Yeah, I mean, I think he makes an excellent point, and that's actually one of the reasons why we went to develop that stuff in S4, is because of the learnings in MAG. Unfortunately, you know, there's a ton of stuff that we'd like to bring over. Our code base has evolved so much in the past couple months, but at this point, I don't think it's likely. But if we get an opportunity to bring over a lot of S4 code that supports that kind of functionality, then something we could look at.
Is it a hard thing to implement? Is it something that if we decided to put in the game that would take a lot more resources than just flipping a switch? Which we don't really flip switches. You have to write code, but
right. Yeah, it's certainly more than flipping a switch.
Designers are always hoping that it's just a flip switch. But
yeah, certainly at this point, I don't think it's feasible. I mean, if we, when SOCOM 4 is kind of done in development and we maybe push some people back to the MAG team, it's something we can look at. But right now, we're just all hands on deck on SOCOM 4.
Yes, it's very busy right now. And for those of you that don't know, MAG and SOCOM 4 had separate teams throughout their development cycles. But as we get closer to the end of SOCOM, we shift resources so that we're a lot more focused on one over the other. Doesn't mean that one project is abandoned, but the majority of our resources right now are going towards finishing our game.
Right. Jacob wants to know, regarding the pistols in the game, when you're putting accessories on it, what is the second spot for? I could only put silencers on it, but nothing else. What goes there?
So that spot's kind of a legacy. I mean, it's pretty interesting, but when we were first developing MAG, we had a ton of stuff that we had to shelve. I mean, things like extended magazines and laser sights, lots of different options for, for your backup weapon that eventually we just couldn't get in due to, memory or development constraints, what have you. So we left it in because we assumed that, down the line we'll be able to add content, and that's still a possibility, but that's the reason the spot's there.
Ryanize, I think. Asks, why does the Sever Training Grounds go into Valor Training now after the last patch?
So that's a good question. It actually goes to support what I believe we'll be announcing next week, which is a much larger change. I was sad to see him go. I developed those maps, and I enjoyed them. I thought they were flavorful and cool. But
you got them in your mind.
I know. They're here.
You can hold on to them there.
They're burned in forever. Yeah, but we had to shift it down to a single map to support this new content. And, at this point, I feel like the experience will get you there regardless of, you're a Sever or Raven player playing in, what's traditionally a Valor map. You're still going to get the same level of training. Hopefully that's enough at this point, 10, 11 months after release.
Yeah, again, in case you missed what Ben said, that is actually Sever, Valor, and Raven all now have the same training map, and you'll understand why next week.
Yep. Sith 26307, sounds like a zip code, says, on the Sever Sabotage map, when attacking, you can parachute into C. Was this planned, or was it a mistake?
I don't know about a mistake. It's kind of an edge case. In order for that to really happen, you need to be what's considered at a front of a wave. So we have spawn points, these parachute spawn points, and the way that it works is we stack players in either direction so they don't clip into one another. And in certain cases, you'll be stacked forward, right, to the very first person at the very front of the line. And then if that person has all of the parachute skills unlocked, then they will be able to go further than anyone else. I don't believe you can get directly into C objective, but you can get very close. So again, I mean, it's kind of an edge case, but you know, as a player, I find that kind of exciting. You know, it's like I'm in parachuting right into this location that's heavily defended and people shooting all around me. I kind of enjoy that stuff.
It's also really helpful if you're the type of guy that wants to shoot parachuters and you're in C waiting for them to come
exactly.
at you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, there's advantages to both.
Yeah, go get your medal.
Exactly. Hector V wants to know if there'll be any benefit to owning MAG when we pick up SOCOM 4. Some kind of save recognition with a bonus attached to it or something.
It's probably unlikely. I think, you know, the greatest benefit stemming from MAG that bleeds into SOCOM is just the amount of feedback that we got, you know, about our gameplay systems and our engine and all the development that went into, you know, fixing things and upgrading and making it better. So I think players are going to really feel that on day one with SOCOM because, you know, as you'll see in the coming weeks and months, the engine that we're using is just dramatically improved. The, you know, the lighting is now just beautiful. Materials are really sparkling. You know, I think weapon performance is better. We just got improvements across the board, and maybe Travis can talk about some more of that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the big things, even though, you know, obviously we announced move support with SOCOM 4 first, move, you know, in terms of being live with players, went out with MAG first. And I think there's definitely a lot we've learned from the, you know, some of the usability testing we did. And I think that's really, you know, translated into a lot of these custom options that are available in SOCOM 4 for the move. So definitely, in terms of a motion control standpoint, it's been very valuable to get the feedback from MAG, and I think we're really able to improve S4 as a result.
Marcus Sol wants to know if there are any plans to bring MAG to handheld systems such as the PSP.
That's a cool idea. Again, that's kind of in Sony's hands, less than ours, but it's something we talked about. It's really interesting. I mean, if you really pared it down and just made like a Shadow War type game for PSP that was, you know, really focused on that, that could be a lot of fun.
I think it would have to be very different, though, because the PSP, yeah. I would think that the best design games can be played for 5 to 10 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. And so if you're asking for people to go into a 256 game for 30 minutes, that's not really the mobile, like, on the bus.
Even if you get 256 people.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking more in terms of strategy, right? Like, take the command elements from MAG and make make a more of a strategy game from that. It would be pretty cool.
So instead of doing something like Ratchet and Clank, Size Matters, which is essentially a pared-down version of the console titles, do something more along the lines of Killzone Liberation.
Yeah,
right.
Where they instead of doing a first-person shooter, they did a whole tactical shooter type
of
approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's great about new IPs is that you have this universe that you create and you're looking at it through a singular lens generally, right? But if we allow players to take a different perspective on that narrative, it's, you know, a completely different way to explore it. And it's really cool. I mean, I love when developers do that. I mean, give me insight into, you know, angles that I hadn't thought about before of this, you know, game lore. It's always fun.
Circular Argument wants to know if we were designing MAG 2, what gameplay features would you add or include in general?
I mean, how long do I have for this? Can I just throw darts at the wall?
Jetpacks?
Yeah. Ooh, maybe.
Scott Rudy would.
Highly requested item, the jetpacks. A ton of stuff, honestly. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that we talked about is the learning process of MAG, and that, you know, it's much more rich and challenging than a lot of other shooters out there. And requires a little bit more from the player. So I think that we, as developers, need to give a little bit more on the tutorial side, do better training for leadership ranks, give players a little more insight into more than just the basics, which, you know, it's all we could really give them with MAG. You know, if we were going to do a MAG 2, I'd really want them to be able to learn a little bit at least about the complex mechanics that you need to succeed on the battlefield, and then let players build on that on their own. But a ton of other stuff too. I mean, I'd love to see things like dynamic battlefields, right? Like, imagine you had a gameplay space the size of a domination map, but there were all different types of game types being played in that space, the layered on top of each other, right? Because that's how a real battlefield works. And everybody in the battlefield doesn't have the same mission. I mean, there's, you know, I have this goal and you have this goal, and, you know, sometimes our goals overlap, or you're, you know, driving in front of me going to somewhere else to do a completely different thing. So that for me would be really interesting. I mean, there's so much. I mean,
would you add balaclavas?
Absolutely. I would have like 8 million varieties of balaclavas. I don't know why we wouldn't.
What would you take out though, if anything?
You know, I mean, I think we could adjust certain things. Like,
there are certain game types that I'd like to shift around. For example, I mean, I think acquisition would be much more compelling as a 64-person game type than 128. The way we built it was kind of two 64-player platoons kind of like smooshed
right next to
each
other.
And, you know, and you don't really get the sensation of 128 players that way. And also, like, you know, we thought it was kind of cool to be like, okay, like, there's this platoon next to you that you could be dependent on. And if they're doing poorly, you can ostensibly go over there and help them, right? Well, that, you know, that's really cool in theory, but it proved out to be very difficult. So I think, honestly, like, separating that out and making that game type just a, you know, a focused on your platoon, on your actions, could be a lot more compelling.
Let's get on to some SOCOM questions here.
Fantastic, with a Q, wants to know if there will be any snowy locations in SOCOM 4.
Well, early on, we did a lot of research.
Snowy with an eye.
We did a lot of research on where we wanted this game to take place, area of operation. And actually, that's one of the most fun parts of the project, because we just sit there and basically surf the web, Google Earth, looking for cool locations that would, you know, that are different from maybe what our competition's doing, that offer interesting locations and a plausible scenario that supports the story we want to tell. And that's what we came up with, Southeast Asia. Now, I did my best efforts to research snowy locations in Southeast Asia, and as far as I could tell, there's a couple peaks in Indonesia that maybe occasionally get a small drift of snow.
Mostly frequented by mountain goats.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, it actually, we discussed it, and at the end of the day, it was just seemed a little too crazy to try and work that angle in.
We're in a hot, sweltering area.
Exactly.
That's where the game is set, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, I don't think they're really equipped for any sort of Arctic temperatures down there in Southeast Asia. So, but, you know, that being said, again, with the location we've picked, I think fans will be pretty happy with just the diversity of environments that we've been able to find in Southeast Asia. I mean, again, you have, you know, these slum towns. You've got dense, sprawling metropolises. We have jungles and a variety of other locations. So really, we get quite a bit of variety out of it.
Tiger Shark wants to know how challenging this single-player campaign will be. And I guess this answer will definitely go across the difficulty levels in the game, so you can alter it.
I would say that balancing difficulty in a game like SOCOM is quite a bit more difficult than a lot of other games. It's very challenging. And really,
because it very much comes down to how you play it.
It comes down to how you play it, and it really comes down also to the fact that you have control over teammates and which players want to take advantage of that and which players just want to play it like a standard shooter. So it can be pretty challenging. So we've had to basically, we've created a template for kind of how we feel the game should be played at each of the difficulties. So for example, on easy mode, we would expect that a player who doesn't really feel like using their teammates could pretty much make it through the campaign. Mm-hmm. They're just not into it. For normal, which is the standard way we think SOCOM should be played, you can if you're a good player, you can maybe make it through about the first third of the campaign without using the teammates too much. But after that, you better start using them because it gets challenging. And really, that's what separates SOCOM from other titles out there. The teammates are a big part of it, and we do want players to, you know, we want to encourage them to use the tactics and command them. So the game is balanced accordingly for that. And, you know, if you are just, you know, one of the best shooter players out there, you might make it a little further in there without using the buddies. But that's generally for our typical player, you need to use them to complete the game on normal. And then for, you know, hard and elite, you know, if you don't use teammates, forget about it. Your history. And one of the funny things, you know, with balancing difficulty is we're constantly putting it in front of focus groups to kind of see how we're tracking. And the difficulty of the game on any given week can vary dramatically as fix issues or new issues pop up. It was funny. We did a focus test not that long ago where a couple issues popped up at the last minute. And it was just an absolute meat grinder. I think one guy spent 4.5 hours on one of our big encounters. So while that's good for overall campaign length, it might be...
And it's funny to us watching as it happens.
It's pretty funny.
I played that build, and I was probably 3/4 of the way through the game, and I come out of one location into another, and it's kind of this open area, and there's people waiting for you. And I took some cover right when I came out, and then all of a sudden, it's just like... horizontal rain of bullets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, as soon as I stick my head out, I'm dead. And sure enough, as soon as I looked, I was just dead. And I'm like, I'm not going to pass this and quit.
That's probably pretty close to what we'll have for the elite mode. But, you know, in terms of the normal mode, not quite that hard. So recently been working a lot, you know, design and AI in particular, collaborating, and as well as level design team to just, you know, tweak the numbers and get it tuned more in line with kind of those parameters I said earlier. And I think we're really close now, actually. It's feeling really good. And I think Definitely people are utilizing the teammates in these bigger encounters, which is really exciting for us. And I think, again, it makes for much more interesting gameplay.
It's really getting there. And what I'd be interested in is listening to players who played our E3 demo of our first level, because the demo that we had at E3 is the very first level of the game.
And it was also, you couldn't die in it.
Yeah, and so. It had God mode on.
Yeah.
But if they would go back and now play the first level, which even though it's the tutorial level for all intents and purposes, still has its challenging moments, especially near the end.
Oh yeah, particularly at the end.
Yes.
We take it a little easy on you for the first part of it, but the end is a battle for sure.
I'd be really interested to see what people who played it at E3 and then play the final version when it happens, to see what they would say about how dramatic it is. Not only has it how dramatically different it looks too, because it looks a lot better than it did at E3, but just how much more effective it is as a gameplay experience.
Oh yeah, I mean the levels made huge strides, in particular in the area of training. That's one of the biggest areas that's changed since the E3 build. Again, through these focus tests, where we're constantly trying to get feedback on, you know, which parts of the game people are understanding and maybe which parts they get hung up on, training was one of the things we kept coming back to. And it was important from day one. We wanted to integrate training in a more immersive fashion so it actually takes place, you know, in an actual campaign mission rather than necessarily a dedicated training ground. And we've implemented a number of new aspects, again, to that E3 level. That just basically meter out the progression of, you know, teaching the player different aspects of the game, whether it's simple things like throwing grenades all the way up to more advanced things like commanding teammates. And we've seen great results from that. And I think particularly for people that are new to the title, they're picking it up much faster. So
I think with the teammates, I mean, that's another thing that you'll see in that final encounter that you just discussed, is that we kind of train you on teammate usage throughout the level. But once you get to that final encounter, you're at a point where you're like, oh, wow, maybe I really need to use these guys. Yeah. Maybe they'll actually help me accomplish my goals. And that was the best part for me, is because before it's like, all right, like I can run and gun these guys. That's fine. Like teammates, hang back. I got this, you know. But when you get to that encounter, you're like, oh boy, that's a lot of guys.
And it's really funny too, because we have a number of players that'll come and play SOCOM maybe for the first time, who are used to just other standard run and gun shooters. Mm-hmm. And it's just hilarious. They'll just go sprinting right into the middle of combat and get gunned down and do it again and do it again. And maybe after about, you know, the fifth time or maybe longer, they'll eventually figure out this is a tactical shooter, not just some run and gun shooter.
I remember one of our focus tests last week, there was a guy that was playing that way. He was run and gun at first. And he just kept shouting, my bad, my fault, my fault. His teammates, like his teammates, like they could hear him. Yeah. Like, sorry, that's me. I didn't mean to. But you know, one other thing that you mentioned, the grenades earlier, that I think is worth mentioning, the training has improved, but we've also looked at ways that we don't have to make things as obvious either. For instance, since E3, we got rid of the grenade meter that tells you exactly where you're placing the grenade exactly. It's a lot more realistic looking and natural feeling.
Yeah, I mean, when S4 started, we only had the standard style grenade trajectory arc. And then we said, now let's try doing just the simple, you know, point the reticle at something and click the button. And it's worked so well that we found that most people weren't even using the arc anymore. And another issue, again, from focus testing we found was that back then, our method for switching to the laser designator for airstrikes was maybe not as intuitive as maybe it could be. And so when we removed the grenade trajectory arc, we just made it so basically if you hold down that same button that was the arc, it'll actually call in the strike when you have it available, which is working much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of people seem to kind of think that putting controls into a game is a very simple thing. And they say, why can't I customize everything? And how come I want to put this button there? And it's easy. All you got to do is move and shoot. But when you look at all of the different things you have to do, throw a grenade, call on the laser strike, command your teams, reload, take cover, all of these things put together, it becomes actually very complicated. And figuring out where the buttons are best used and all these kind of things across a number of players. Because you have players coming from other shooters that expect things. You have players coming from the PC that expect to play one way. People that have never played a shooter before but have only played Little Big Planet or something. And, you know, all this stuff you have to, you know, account for all of them, and it becomes a pretty challenging thing to get correct.
Absolutely. The teammates are, I think, the real cause for, you know, the controls challenges in terms of balancing everything. Because if you took the teammate commands out of the equation, getting all those controls to map really isn't that difficult. But when you factor that we're losing a good 4 buttons just on teammate commands, and for good reason. I mean, I think the way we've set up the controls works great for commanding teammates. But that is the challenge that some of these other shooter titles maybe don't have, is that, you know, we have to account not only for the basic mechanics that people are used to, but also this added layer of being able to command your forces.
Mm-hmm. Several forum goers have asked us frequently with SOCOM 4 movie users will be able to customize their control settings similar to how they can for Mag.
Yeah, I touched on that a little bit earlier. Basically, when they load up S4, they're going to find that the customizable settings are pretty much almost identical to what we have in Mag. And again, it didn't necessarily start out that way in S4, but based on the feedback we saw from Mag, and particularly through these focus tests, it was something we really felt important about adding. So we have a lot more custom options in there than we did, say, 7 months ago.
And, yes.
To clarify, when you say that it's almost identical to Mag, it's not the buttons aren't mapped exactly the same. Right. You just mean the amount of choices.
In terms of being able to delve in there and find detail and actually adjust, you know, the size of the window for turning rates and things like that. Every little detail, just to really customize the motion control experience for each player. Because I think that's really the key. Is that we found that when players use the move, you know, different people have different skill levels or widely different preferences for how sensitive it is. And so it is important to allow them to customize it basically to their heart's content to get the exact experience that they want.
Absolutely. One of the things that, you know, we wanted to put out there is that the calibration is so important, more than people recognize, I think. Like, it's, you know, we have all these settings for you to really tweak things and you know, tune them to your desire. But the biggest thing that you have to do is get a proper calibration. So when you get that screen, when you get, you know, the Sony calibration screen, make sure that you go through the prompts and, you know, and it feels good to you before you say, okay, let's go forward, because that's going to have more impact than anything we can really give you, because that really hits the settings of the controller itself. But, you know, to Travis's point, I mean, there's even more, you know, there's even more control than Mag, because one of the things that we've been, you know, working on is support for the sharpshooter attachment, which, you know, Sony recently announced. And, you know, that peripheral is just fantastic. We've been having a lot of fun with it. So you'll have an array of custom options for that as well.
And it's changed a lot. I remember the early prototypes that we had that we were looking at, much different then. And it's a lot more, it feels a lot more like a natural, like a real gun than it did before, where before it felt like a peripheral. But I think that just the positioning of everything actually makes it feel like you're a part of the battle, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from day one, when we got our hands on the first PlayStation Move controller, we're like, all right, where's the gun attachment?
Yeah.
We want a big old assault rifle. And even, you know, quite a while back, I remember we were doing some concept sketches here, even talking about, you know, the creative director and myself even looking at, like, you know, making sure we had that fire mode selector and a reload button. So it has changed quite a bit even from those early sketches, but I think actually it's changed for the better. It's really
definitely
cool.
Well, I think what's great is that, you know, there are a lot of games that are going to come out and support it really quickly, but, you know, with SOCOM, we're doing the best to support all the functionality that the controller has. So I think you're going to see a couple of options there that other games don't support at once.
With stickers.
We have colorized stickers.
Mm-hmm.
They're fancy.
No Fear has a very specific question about all of these move options that we're talking about here. And he wants to know, after playing Mag for a while and looking at some of the videos from E3 and stuff like that with the move and SOCOM 4, he wants to know if it's possible to lock the reticule to the center of the screen where any movement will change your viewport, more like a mouse would, rather than kind of having it loose and floaty.
So the very first prototype that we ever hooked up with the PlayStation Move and S4 was actually worked just like that. And we just didn't like it. It just didn't seem to work well for the style of game that we are with the third person.
And it's not something we quickly abandoned. I mean, we put a good amount of work into trying to, you know, figure that out. And, you know, engineering came up with a couple of different solutions. And, you know, it was brought up again with, you know, with the sharpshooter. And we said, okay, well, mm-hmm. let's try this. It doesn't work. And, you know, it's just proven really difficult for the type of game that we've made. So, you know, I think the implementation that we have right now is pretty rock solid, and players should appreciate it.
You can, however, lock that the movement area down much tighter than you
Absolutely.
See from most of the videos. For me, three, the default stuff that we're giving people is you move all the way to the edge before the screen turns, because it's a little more forgiving that way, but you can lock it down pretty tight
to
where
absolutely.
It becomes
That's
close
part
to
of
that,
the custom
at least.
Settings. But yeah. In terms of actually, you know, completely locking it to the center, you guys just have to trust us that that was our inclination as well, and it is actually a lot worse than you would think
than
it would
sounds.
Be.
Yeah, unless you love motion sickness, it's not for you.
Some do.
Red Violence has a very good question, and I think it's. I'm glad that we're answering it. How much new content has been added to the game because of the delay? We announced the delay at the end of July. How much new content has been added?
Well, you know, it can be tempting when you have a schedule extension or delay, if you will, to just sit there and add a bunch of new content. But that was not the case with SOCOM 4. It is more important, I think, these days for creating a highly polished title to just focus on making what you have better. So that's really been where most of the effort's gone. We have added a few new things, but they're, you know, mainly just we have some new weapons that we've added, and we have some new MP character skins. But other than that, pretty much all the focus of the team has gone in, again, to improving what we already set out to
and
do.
And a few technical aspects, but nothing, no new game, nothing that impacts the gameplay. We didn't add a mode or
no.
get rid of a mode. Or
No, nothing drastic like that.
And the one thing that I want to add to that is we have been saying all along that the game was delayed for the reason of polish. So it wasn't delayed to add the Morgans or skins or whatever. Those things were a byproduct of it. But believe it or not, it really was for polish and to make the game better.
Fun story. I did get sent this is the truth. I got a message sent to me, a PM on the SOCOM forums, soon after we put up the delay announcement, asking me about the polish and said, what does Poland have to do with fixing the game?
So
not
much.
Not that I said Polish and not that's Polish.
Awesome. We owe the Poles everything.
We do have Polish special forces in the game, so we spent more time in that. But
that's
no,
true.
Really, I mean, you know, Zipper and Sony feel really good about the features we have, but really, when you have more time to spend on just making them better, it really pays off big. And I think that even in the last month, we've seen tremendous strides in the quality of the product.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely, that time has paid off quite a bit.
The game, Chris and I both played through the game 2 months ago.
Something like that, yeah.
Whenever it was, a month and a half, 2 months ago, we played all the way through it. We've been playing it again lately. It's like night and day.
Yeah. Travis and I had this conversation actually last night. I was saying, I'm like, wow, you know, when I started working on SOCOM, I was like, okay, like I get what's going on. I like it, you know, it's all right. And then the last 2 months, I'm like, oh, wow. All right. This has really come together. I really enjoy this experience now. I'm having so much fun. Like, play all the way through the campaign, and just, you know, every bit of it gets better and better and better.
I mean, even just an example of this, you know, things that maybe people wouldn't even think of is just, you know, basic shooting mechanics, mm-hmm. right? I think for a long time, the shooting in the game, you know, was pretty good, but it wasn't quite up to the level we wanted it to be. So even just some subtle changes, tweaks to the controls, the audio feedback that you get from each shot, the particle effects,
camera shake,
yeah. animation. All that stuff goes so far in just making the entire game feel so much better. So it's those kinds of things we've been able to apply across the board to just make everything from AI, UI, all the core systems, level design particular. You know, we've been able to go back and do several revisions on the encounters in the campaign and pick out, you know, where is kind of the weak spots here? Where are people getting stuck? And actually have time to go back and rethink some of those encounters and say, you know what? This feels kind of repetitive. Let's change it up and bring something new that we haven't done before. So again, I mean, for things like encounter changes and levels, I wouldn't call that a feature change. That really is just polish. It's taking some of the AI that we've already placed and maybe rearranging them, putting some new types of enemies in there, and subtle changes like that that maybe are relatively simple to do, but again, pay off big time in the end.
Bazzer has a question about loadouts and all these things, and the gist of it is, why does the game not count encumbrance of any sort, and why are players able to move at the same speed regardless of what weapon or whatever they're carrying? I think most people will know the answer to this. But
and we have touched on this a little bit before.
Yeah,
but
this is something we talked about a while back, but you know, one of the big reasons, I think, is just we did have the encumbrance in SOCOM 3, and while it did offer, you know, some interesting trade-offs in terms of choosing your loadout and the effects of that, I think at the end of the day, what we found is it's just not much fun to run slow. Mm-hmm. You know, who wants to do that? So that's primarily the reason for the change. And I think we've done other things to balance the aspects. So you still have meaningful choices when picking your weapons. We've just balanced that through other means. But really, it just comes down to it's not much fun to play the game, you know, running slow. And also, if people are more or less moving at similar rates, we're able to keep players grouped together. So it supports the teamwork a lot better if you're moving at similar speeds.
I like to think that MAG was sort of the studio's game for, let's let you upgrade everything. So you start weak, and then you get better over time, and you get paid for that. And SOCOM is the kind of game where you say everybody's on level playing ground, and there's going to be, it's focused more on competition of everybody having the exact same sort of stuff, whereas MAG is, you got to put your time into, you know, more like an MMO upgrade RPG
yeah.
type thing.
I think that, you know, for the most part, you know, I agree with that. I think one big difference, though, with MAG versus, you know, say, the old encumbrance system we had in SOCOM is, in SOCOM, it always felt like a penalty, right? Mm-hmm. The old encumbrance system, where I think it's a little different if the game is rewarding you
yeah.
and you're progressing. So it's like you have the standard speed and you're getting better mm-hmm. as opposed to having the standard speed and taking some of that speed away. Mm-hmm. So I think there's definitely a difference there.
And just to be clear, it's not a 100% no encumbrance system. There are some things that will slightly slow you down.
We have a few exceptions that I can't go into detail just yet, but I think the statement still stands true, you know, in 95% of cases, there is no encumbrance. But we do have a couple special situations where I think players, once they see it, they'll understand why, in some cases, the movement slowed down.
Probably make some pretty good guesses as to what those are and be pretty close right now. Dr. McNoob wants to know how large the largest map or level in S4 is. There's been some confusion since, I believe it was Tom when he was on the show. He was talking about that maps were roughly the same size as SOCOM 3 maps, but those things were, they ranged from Fault to Killing Fields, and they were made for vehicular play where, you'd be driving across the map and, big open spaces and all that. So
I didn't actually have a chance to talk to Tom about that, but I can only imagine that maybe what he was thinking was he was comparing the size of some of the non-vehicle maps of SOCOM 3. Potentially to the maps we have, because of course, when you have vehicles, the whole scale just changes. And that's one of the big reasons that we don't have vehicles in SOCOM 4, was just to be able to keep the scale consistent and keep that high density of combat. So as a general ballpark, I would say that our biggest map from multiplayer is about on par with, say, Guidance, or maybe even, somewhat like Fox Hunt. Actually, this big map I'm thinking of, the inspiration behind it was Fox Hunt. So I think more in terms of those map sizes. That would be our biggest map. And then again, I think I mentioned before, our smallest map, I actually think, is probably smaller than any SOCOM map we've ever had. Right. So there's a range there, but certainly nothing as big as our biggest SOCOM.
The single player maps can get much bigger, obviously, because you have, it's a progression thing and you go from one side to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. The single player maps range in size quite a bit. But again, because you're not driving anywhere in a drivable vehicle, they tend to be probably have smaller scales than the SOCOM 3 single player maps.
Some of the maps near the end of the game, though, are really large.
Yeah. Yeah. They are. I mean, and it's nice because we can have some pretty epic encounters in those bigger maps. But again, I think if you were to actually put it in a 3D editor and look at it side by side from, say, some
not
of the,
that
again,
big.
These long. Well, I mean, they're good size. They're really good size for, again, for an infantry map. But again, you're able to cover so much ground when you're driving a Humvee that it's really, those kind of maps are just of an entirely different scale.
Mashed Potatoes, who's another friend of the podcast, wants to know if there'll be any ghillie suits in S4.
So we don't have any now, but it's definitely something we've been thinking about. So we'll definitely keep that in mind.
It's breaking from format, but it comes up for Mag a lot too. Any ghillie suits for Mag in its future?
It's a possibility. I'd love to see it. You could have a red severed ghillie suit. I don't think I've ever seen one before. That'd be pretty hot.
I'd like to see a ghillie suit with LED lights, defeating the purpose of wearing it.
It's like you're walking Christmas tree.
Exactly.
If we ever do support ghillie suits down the road, I will say that would be one of these particular instances where I think the encumbrance would come back into play. Because if you have a ghillie suit, who's going to pick to play as one of the other characters? I mean, this ghillie suit is so overpowering. So that would be a case where maybe we would slow the movement down for the gameplay trade-offs of having that, or maybe give a little less body armor. So that's something we'll definitely think about.
Blackout Basement wants to know if the screenshot capture feature that recently went into Mag will make its way into SOCOM 4. And let me extend this, just like Jeremy did to Mag as well. I know some people were asking if there would ever be a hotkey for Mag, so you wouldn't have to bring up the XMB to take the screenshot. So are either one of those?
I mean, that's a good idea. Again, as Travis was discussing earlier, when you have so many buttons that are predetermined, it's really difficult to have, a quote-unquote hotkey. I think it'd be super useful. I mean, if we're playing on PC, PC players are used to that. You press F12 or print screen or whatever to capture that. But, with a console controller, it's a little more difficult.
If you could find a way to hook up your Steel Battalion troller.
There you go.
Yes.
Nothing is epic, man.
I think it'd be cool. It's not something we're currently supporting. It's not to say we couldn't look into it in the future, but
the other thing
we
won't
have it at launch.
The thing to keep in mind about the screenshot capture feature was that it was just recently put in Mag after almost a year on the market, and the reason is because it actually, taking screenshots, it has a memory footprint.
It does have a memory footprint. Well, and it also, takes you out of gameplay for a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. And, in competitive multiplayer environments, that's always dangerous, as anybody know. I mean, if you stop moving, you're dead, right? So if you're taking a screenshot, you're stopping to move. So, choose wisely.
So a lot of the approach for both Mag and SOCOM are, what's more important? Do you want to be able to have the game run better, look slightly better, or do you want to be able to take that screenshot? And we've had so much time with Mag over the last year plus. We've started to optimize things to the point to where we can have both. Whereas SOCOM, we still want to have as much bang for the buck as possible in first coming out, and then you could look at those other features.
Our efforts right now are just making the core gameplay as good as it can be. And then, maybe down the road we can look at some other fun little neat features like that.
Strangio says that when the GameStop pre-order page first went up, they mentioned co-op. but then it quickly went away, which is interesting. Is there co-op?
We have no announcements at this time.
Very good.
The entire SOCOM fan base want to know when the information drought is going to end.
Good question. I don't actually know.
Looking at me for.
I'm looking at you, yeah.
Well, it's already kind of started, I guess, a little bit with SOCOM.com this week. Right?
Yeah, this
I
mean, was kind of like, the first tease that the wave is going to get kicked.
Consider it the warning shot. The
and warning I will say, I've been saying this a lot on the forums lately, the reason for the blackout, the delay obviously kind of pushed the news information back.
That's the number one reason for the blackout, number one.
That's the number one.
The delay.
But the reason that we didn't kind of spread things out over that period of time, when we had, you know, more time between the announcement and the release, was... We don't want to come out with a bunch of information and then need you to be quiet and then tell you something and then need you to be quiet again. When we start talking about the game again, there will be a relatively constant flow of information. And so when we start again, we're not going to stop.
We've talked a little bit about this on the forums, and every game has its own PR and marketing plan. Every game is different. It's dependent on the player base and the market and what the strategy is. And from the very beginning, even before the delay, our whole approach has been SOCOM 4 is to have a concise, very specific, rapid-fire approach. As opposed to, and you know, you see things like this for games like Grand Theft Auto, where they announce the game, and then there's nothing said for the game for quite a long time, and then almost until, I'd say, a month before it comes out, all of a sudden it's information overload. And we can speak this firsthand based on our old job when we used to cover the game. But then you also have other games like, let's say, the THQ's WWE SmackDown series, which is, since every wrestler is essentially their own personality, they are really granular there, and they focus on specific characters for a long amount of time on top of the mode. So,
Or you could do Duke Nukem Forever, and just release stuff over a decade.
There you go. But the continuing theme there is that both games have different PR and marketing approaches, but both games are highly successful, and both games are really beloved by their audience. And so our strategy is to be very concise and very specific. Not like my answer, but
yeah.
There you go. Soon.
Yep.
Soon, soon, soon. And by soon, we really, really mean it.
Yep. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you guys for coming on here and helping us close out the year.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for having us. And we are definitely excited to share more next year.
Certainly excited to talk about it. If you guys have any questions or comments, as usual, you can send us an email, zipline@zipperint.com, or you can visit our official forums where we put up threads that are related to our podcast in the blog discussion area, and that's on SOCOM.com and MAG.com.
And you can always find us on your favorite social networking sites like Facebook. You can go to Facebook.com/ZipperInteractive or Facebook.com/SOCOM, and you can find us on Twitter at Twitter.com/Zipper.
This was our final show of the year. Thanks once again to Ben and Travis and Chris and all of everyone here at Zipper and all of you out there for making the show possible, for letting us come into your homes and talk to us.
Which we're now changing.
Which we're now saying, get rid of it. We're going to do it over again. But we look forward to seeing you again next year with our new format.
January 14th.
January 14th. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. It's already happened. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Everyone take care. See you next year.
You forgot Christmas.
Festivus.
Yes, Festivus. Pizza Street.